नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 16, a description of Jambudvipa. We have texts 26 through to the end of the chapter, which is text 29. So I'll read the Sanskrit from 26 and then the translations as we go. Kuranga, Kurara, Kusumba, Vakanka, Trikuta, Shishira, Patanga, Ruchaka, Nishada, Shinivasa, Kopila, Shanka, Vaidurya, Jaradi, Hunksa, Rishabha, Naga, Kalanjara, Naradadayo, Vinkshati, Girayo, Meroho, Karnakaya, Iva, Kesara, Bhuta, Mula, Deshe, Horita, Upakliptaha. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. There are other mountains beautifully arranged around the foot of Mount Meru, like the filaments around the whorl of a lotus flower. And their names are Kuranga, Kurara, Kusumbha, Vaikanka, Trikuta, Shishira, Patanga, Ruchaka, Nishadha, Shinivasa, Kopila, Shankha, Vaidurya, Jarudhi, Hansa, Rishabha, Naga, Kalanjara, and Narada. Text 27. Jatara Deva Kuta Merum Urvenashtadasha Yojana Sahasram Udagayatao Dvi Sahasrang Ritu Tungao Bhavataha Evam Aparena Pavana Pariyatra Dakshinena Kailasha Karvirao Prag Ayatav Evam Uttaratas Trishringa Makarav Ashtabhir Etai Parisrito Gnir Iva Paritas Chakasti Kanchanagirihi. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. On the eastern side of Sumeru Mountain are two mountains named Jatara and Devakuta, which extend to the north and south for 18,000 yojanas, 144,000 miles. Similarly, on the western side of Sumeru are two mountains named Pavana and Pariyatra, which also extend north and south for the same distance. On the southern side of Sumeru are two mountains named Kailasa and Karavira, which extend east and west for 18,000 yojanas. And on the northern side of Sumeru, extending for the same distance east and west, are two mountains named Trishringa and Makara. The width and height of all these mountains is 2,000 yojanas, 16,000 miles. Sumeru, a mountain of solid gold shining as brilliantly as fire, is surrounded by these eight mountains. Text 28. Merur murdhani bhagavata atma yoner madhyata upakliptam purim ayata yojana sahasrim samachaturasram shatakaumbhim vadanti. In the middle of the summit of Meru is the township of Lord Brahma. Each of its four sides is calculated to extend for 10 million yojanas, 80 million miles. It is made entirely of gold, and therefore the learned scholars and sages call it Shatakaumbhi. And text 29. Tam anuparito lokapalanam ashtanam yatha disham yatha rupam turiyamanena puroshtapukliptaha. Surrounding Brahmapuri in all directions are the residences of the eight principal governors of the planetary systems, beginning with King Indra. These abodes are similar to Brahmapuri, but are one-fourth the size. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms that the townships of Lord Brahma and the eight subordinate governors of the planetary systems, beginning with Indra, are mentioned in other Puranas. Merau Navapurani Shur Manovatyamaravati Tejovati Saumyamani Tata Krishnanganapara Shradhavati Gandhavati Tata Chanya Mahodaya Yashovati Chabrahmindra Bahyadi Nam Yatakramam. Brahma's township is known as Manovati, and those of his assistants such as Indra and Agni are known as Amaravati, Tejovati, Sangyamani, Krishnangana, Shradhavati, Gandhavati, Mahodaya, and Yashovati. Brahmapuri is situated in the middle, and the other eight puris surround it in all directions. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 16th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of Jambudvipa. Om Ajnana Kivarantasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Vidham Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Venama Vancha Kalpatiru Vyascha Kripasandu Vyavcha Patti Palam Pavanaya Vashya. So, fifth canto, Bhagavat. Is that better? Everyone can hear? Okay. Fifth canto, Bhagavat, cosmography, or cosmology. Cosmography means the geography of the universe. So this section of the Bhagavatam, some devotees maybe skip over it a little too technical, details that maybe aren't required. Other devotees may get fully absorbed in the details, trying to understand the different layout of the parts of the universe. But like all other parts of the Bhagavatam, this is simply meant to bring us closer to Krishna, to increase our Krishna consciousness. We saw at the beginning of this chapter, Maharaj Parikrit, when he asked Srila Shukadev Goswami to describe these features of the universe, he stated, when the mind is fixed upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his external feature made of the material modes of nature, the gross universal form, it is brought to the platform of pure goodness. In that transcendental position, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, who in his subtler form is self-effulgent and beyond the modes of nature. O my Lord, please describe vividly how that form, which covers the entire universe, is perceived. And similarly, at the end of this section of the fifth canto of cosmography, Srila Shukadeva Goswami states similarly, in the beginning, the second and third cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, I've already described how one can progress on the path of liberation. In the Puranas, the vast universal existence, which is like an egg divided into 14 parts, is described. This vast form is considered the external body of the Lord, created by His energy and qualities. It is generally called the Virat Rupa. If one reads the description of this external form of the Lord with great faith, or if one hears about it or explains it to others to propagate Bhagavad Dharma or Krishna consciousness, his faith and devotion in spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, will gradually increase. Although developing this consciousness is very difficult, by this process one can purify himself and gradually come to the awareness of the Supreme Absolute Truth. So before the whole description, Srila Maharaj Parikrit, he states this. After the whole description, Srila Sukadeva Goswami states the same. This whole description of the universe is simply to give us an opportunity to become more Krishna conscious. It's not that we are meant to become absorbed in the features of the universe just for the sake of knowing it. This is not the purpose. The description of the Virat form of the Lord is there, it's described in Second Canto Bhagavatam. It's for the neophytes, for the beginners. Okay? So according to Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the pure devotees are of two types, the per- personal associates and the neophytes. Okay, so with that understanding of what a neophyte is, we can see that this description of the universe is useful for us. Okay, we are dealing with the universe, with a small part of the universe, and it's important for us to see the world in connection with Krishna. This is the importance of the Virat meditation, to see everything related to Krishna. Of course, everything is eternally related to Krishna. Nothing is separate from Krishna. The idea that something exists separately from Krishna, that is Maya. It's not that the world around us is Maya. The world around us is Krishna's energy, always. But our vision of it as something separate that we can enjoy, that's Maya. Okay. So the purpose of the Virat meditation is to see that the universe is a form of Krishna. Of course, Krishna has no material form. His form is purely spiritual, Satchidananda. No touch of the modes of nature. But because the material creation made from the three modes is his energy, it is not different from him. So for those who are unable to conceive of the transcendental form of the Lord, this meditation is given so that we can fix in our mind, yes, the Lord is a person. Even if it's a conception that's material, it's imaginary, still, it's a conception the Lord is a person and everything that exists is a part of him. Now this is very important. The conception of the conditioned souls is that I am the controller and I am the enjoyer. And whatever we see, we think how to enjoy. But by understanding that whatever we see is Krishna's, then the tendency to enjoy that is reduced. At least an understanding will be there that, well, it's not mine. So I cannot freely enjoy it in whatever way I like. I can offer it to Krishna because it's his, and I can enjoy something in that way. In common law, in the law books, a field belongs to an owner. Whatever grows in that field, even if someone else plants the seeds, whatever grows in that field belongs to the owner of the field. Okay? Similarly, if we see that the universe, every place within it, and everything within it, and everyone within it, belongs to Krishna, then we'll understand naturally that, oh, it has to be used for his pleasure. I just can't take it and do what I like. So this is the benefit of studying this Virat section, that we can see everything. Can you hear? How's that? That we can see everything in connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this verse today, in these verses, we are hearing some details. First, of Mount Meru and of the number of mountains that exist around Meru and of the cities of demigods on top of Mount Meru. So the first verse, chapter 26, stated that there's 20 mountains existing, coming out from around the base of Mount Meru. So Mount Meru is in the shape of like a cone, like when you look in the lotus flower, you have the central part, it's like a cone with the base on the top. The seed pod of the lotus, Karnika. So from the base of that, if you look in the lotus flower, you have all the stamens, these filaments coming around, they have the pollen on top. So similarly in this Bhuvanakosha or Bhupadma is described in the Puranas, that the earth in the form of a lotus flower, where Meru is the seed pod. And coming from out around the base of Meru, there's these 20 mountains that are like the filaments of the lotus flower. And they extend as high as the top of Mount Meru. And their names are given here for those who want to know the details. Mount Kuranga, Mount Kurara, Mount Kusumba, and so on and so on. In this verse, 19 names are given, with the word Adayaha on the end. So some of our acharyas, they state that actually, because there's 20 mountains, there's 20 names are given. And this Adayaha is actually Adi, which is the name of one of the mountains. So rather than in this case, Adi meaning 19 names and so on, actually one of the mountains is named Adi. So on these mountains, there are, like on all the other mountains around in Ilavrita Varsha and the other Varshas, there's abodes wherein different devas and upadevas, yakshas, gandharvas and so on, they reside there. So sometimes you may wonder, you know, there's Bhuloka, the earthly planet, then Bhuvarloka, and then Swargaloka. This is the three worlds, earth, intermediate space, and then the heavenly planet, Swarga. So the sun illuminates these three worlds. So the inhabitants of the Bhuvarloka are the yakshas, gandharvas, charanas, siddhas. So they are, their abodes are on the tops of these mountains, in various pleasure gardens and so on. They live there. In the next verse, it's stated that on the eastern side of Sumeru Mountain are two mountains named Jatara and Devakuta. So here we have a description giving that Meru's in the center, we have filament mountains around it, and on each of the four sides, there's two other mountains that are running north-south and east-west direction, creating a square, a paridhi, around the base of Mount Meru. There's a gap between Meru and these mountains of about 1,000 yojanas. So there's a square surrounding it. And in this verse it says that Sumeru, a mountain of solid gold, is shining brightly in the center of these, as bright as fire. So in the commentaries by some of our acharyas, they bring out that actually this is the form of a Jagyakund. Yes, the earth, it has the form of a lotus, that's described, Bhupadma. But also this Jambudvip has the form of a Jagyakund, where Mount Meru in the center is like the blazing fire. Around the kund, you lay kusha grass as a paridhi, as a border around the fire. Similarly, these eight mountains are around the fire like the kusha grass or darva grass that is made as a paridhi. And then going out from there, you know, we have the various mountains that run across Jambudvip, Bharat Varsha, then the Himalayas, and the next Varsha, and the next mountains. So in some of the Puranas, like the Markandeya Purana, Vayu Purana, it describes that these two sides of Jambudvip are like the two halves of a Jagyakund. So if you can go to Gurukul in the big temple hut there, you can see a permanently placed Jagyakund, and you see there's the central pit and then the steps, steps, steps. So it's like this, there's Bharat Varsha, mountain range, next Varsha, mountain range, next Varsha, mountain range, in the form of a Jagyakund, with Ilavrita Varsha in the center as the blazing fire of Mount Meru. So the Jagyakund is meant for sacrifice. Offerings for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the... Here we're living in Bharat Varsha, on the southern side of the Kunda. And this is considered to be Karma Bhumi. From here, one can go to any destination, within the universe or outside of the universe. So even the demigods, they say, oh, this is a special place to be born. This is a very special place to be born. Of course, in the modern, you know, scientific understanding, the earth is just a little particle of dust way off in the vast expanse of space with no central position. But this has a very negative effect upon the psyche of humanity. When the earth is placed as a central position wherein the living entities have the opportunity to engage in sacrifice for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord and thus become free from entanglement in the material world, then a great responsibility, a duty, is imposed upon humanity. So this is what's given in the Vedas. From here, we can go anywhere or we can go out of the universe. So this requires sacrifice. So the whole setup is described as being like a sacrificial kund. And from here, the living entity, the human beings, humanity in particular, are meant to engage all their activities in sacrifice for the pleasure of Supreme. By doing this, one can attain to the spiritual world. So then the next verse, we have a description of, in the middle of Mount Meru is the town of Lord Brahma, Shatakaumbhi, made entirely of gold. So Lord Brahma, he took his birth from the lotus flower that grew from the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, sitting on the lotus. So similarly, in this Bhupadma, the earth in the shape of a lotus flower, in the middle of the seed vessel, the Mount Meru, he's got his township there. Of course, he also has an abode on Brahmaloka, Satyaloka, the highest planetary system. He also has an abode further out on Bhumandala, on the Pushkara Dweep. It's not limited to one. There was a description with Srila Prabhupada, a discussion with Srila Prabhupada where devotees were saying how the different cities of the demigods on Manasotara Mountain out on Pushkara Dweep, you know, how is it they have an abode there and an abode on Mount Meru? And the description came up, this is like summer residence. If wealthy people in this world can have a holiday home somewhere, why these demigods cannot have the same? So Lord Brahma, he has an abode, Brahmaloka. He has a city here in the middle of Meru. And Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes that when Mother Earth approached Lord Brahma to say that the earth was overburdened with demoniac kings, and, you know, we need to do something about this before Krishna's appearance, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur described that she approached him here on the township on top of Mount Meru. Because if she had have gone to Brahmaloka, the difference in experience of time is so vast that you go there for 1 second and, you know, yugas have passed here. But you go to Mount Meru, you stay there for a whole day, then 360 days have passed here. It's not so different. So this is where she approached him. And then around Lord Brahma's city are the cities of the 8 principal Lokapalas, beginning with Indra. So these are the devas who are in charge of the 8 directions, the 4 cardinal directions, east, south, west, north, and the 4 intermediate directions. So in this verse, Srila Prabhupada, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, who's quoting from one of the Puranas. He gives the name of each of these cities. And these cities are 1/4 the size of Lord Brahma's city. So they have a dimension of 2,500 yojanas. His is 10,000 yojanas. This, where these cities are, on top of Meru, this is Swarga. This is the heavenly planets. This is described in the Puranas. This is earthly planet. Mount Meru is coming out of the earth, but at the top of Meru, that's Swargaloka. And the 33 crores of demigods, they all have their abodes there. Okay. So, a lot going on. And it's also described in the Puranas that different great sages, they've seen Mount Meru. Bhrigu and others have seen Mount Meru, but they all see it slightly differently. Whereas Lord Brahma alone, he understands exactly what it looks like. So, you know, some would posit that, oh, this indicates some higher dimensional reality. But actually, there's no need to describe these differences of perception by using higher dimensions. Higher dimensions is something that comes from modern mathematics. It's not something that's stated in these, you know, texts of the Bhagavatam. There's 3 dimensions are given, length, breadth, height. These are all stated in this verse from the beginning. Jambudweep has a length of this much, a breadth of this much, and then Mount Meru has a height of this much. And they're the dimensions. There's no 4th dimension mentioned. Okay? But just because we can't perceive it doesn't mean it's in a higher dimension. It just means that our senses are limited. We are only allowed to perceive a certain portion of what is actually in existence. This is a fundamental understanding that our senses are imperfect. We do not perceive everything. We perceive only that which we are given. We live in a certain loka, and by living in that certain loka, we are confined to perceive only a certain amount of the universe. Nothing more, nothing less. Srila Prabhupada described, it's like the animal is tied by the nose and he goes around as much as he likes around the fixed point on the post. And he thinks he's going on and on and on, but he's confined to that specific area. He cannot go beyond it. Similarly for us, the earth is massive, it's so expansive, described here in the Bhagavatam, 4 billion miles in diameter. Okay. We don't perceive all that. Our perception of the earth is limited to a very small amount. Okay. That's the way it is. It doesn't mean that the expanse of the earth exists in some higher dimension, it just means that we're not given the ability to see it. So Lord Brahma, he sees Mount Meru as it is. Others, maybe not. There's a description in the Puranas of Agastya Muni, very powerful sage. He's the one who, by his potency, he made the Vindhya Mountains small. He's only small. I think Agastya Muni is like thumb high or something. Very small, but so much shakti. He drank the whole ocean. And afterwards, he was asked, okay, we've done what we need, now put the ocean back. Oh, I've already digested it. I cannot do it. So, so much shakti, so much potency. But he described that one day he met a powerful sage. I think in the description it brings out that sage was actually Lord Vishnu. But anyway, and the sage said, go take bath in this lake here. And he went in the lake. Next thing, he found himself transferred to the top of Mount Meru. And on top of Mount Meru, looking out, he saw the ring islands and oceans of Jambudweep. Of Bhumandala, starting with Jambudweep, Lakshadweep, the other dweeps, with the concentric oceans around them, you know, the ocean of salt water, milk, ghee, yogurt and so on. He said he saw that. And then again he came back to the hermitage and he no longer saw it. And that he hankers again to one day have that vision. So even a sage as powerful as him, who can drink the whole ocean, who can make the mountain shrink small, he doesn't usually perceive what's being described here. So it's no surprise that we can't. But as followers of the Vedic scriptures, our process of understanding is to simply have faith in what we hear as given by these acharyas. Whatever Srila Shukadeva Goswami speaks, tomorrow's preacher, whatever Srila Sutta Goswami speaks, what our acharyas have commented, what Srila Prabhupada has written, this we accept with faith. This is correct. This is the proper understanding of what the universe is. It doesn't matter what someone else says. It doesn't matter, even if the majority of the world says, oh, this is not true. No, we have faith. This is correct. They don't know, actually. Because look at the origin of this knowledge. It comes from Krishna. He spoke to Brahma and made himself realized. And Brahma, he's an incarnation of a guna avatar. He spoke to Narad. He's an empowered incarnation, empowered bhakti shakti. He spoke to Vyasadeva. He's the personality of God in himself. Madhvacharya, coming down to the acharyas, Lord Chaitanya, and so on and so on. Such great personalities. Okay, they're giving this knowledge. They're accepting this knowledge is fact, it's truth. So with faith we accept, yes, this is true. If we approach with this understanding, then we come closer to Krishna. As I was saying before, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is about bringing us closer to Krishna. So in this section, it's helping us to establish the proper sambandha. We see the world like this, with 14 layers of planetary systems. And we can understand, oh, this is can be understood to be the feet of the Lord. This, the shanks. This, the thighs. This, the waist. This, the heart, head. All the different planetary systems we can see as part of the universal form of the Lord. And then while seeing anything, we can remember the Lord. So in the Vedic, is it Padma Purana? Srila Rupa Goswami quotes, that always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. This is the principle, the essential principle behind all rules and regulations. Sarva vidhi niseda shura. All rules and regulations are servants of this one principle of always remembering Krishna and never forgetting Krishna. Okay, so always remembering Krishna means thinking of Krishna as Bhagwan. Okay? Always, never forgetting Krishna means whatever might distract us from Krishna, we have to somehow see that in connection to Krishna so that we don't get distracted. There's so much knowledge given in the Vedas of the material world, but it's always given in connection to Krishna. Okay? You could take the same knowledge. Say in the Vedangas you have Sanskrit grammar. So Srila Jiva Goswami gives Sanskrit grammar connected to Krishna. This is Harinamrita Vyakarana. So that by learning the grammar you stay in perfect connection with Krishna. You see everything in relation to it. You can take the same Sanskrit grammar and divorce it from Krishna and just study it as an entity in its own. That's called avidya. Same technical knowledge, but because it's disconnected from a conscious relationship with the Lord, it's ignorance. Okay? This cosmology of the world can be done the same. So many people study the universe, what they see, but because they're seeing it having no connection with the Lord, it's ignorance. But the same subject matter studied in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's called aparavidya, and it brings us closer to Krishna. So this is never forgetting Krishna. We see the sun, this is the eye of the Lord. We see the mountains, the bones of the Lord, the rivers, the veins, the trees, the hairs, the cloud, the hairs on his head, so many things. Srila Prabhupada was walking on a beach with some disciples, and one disciple said, "Oh, Prabhupada, you know, it's so wonderful and beautiful. We see the ocean, the beach. It makes it so hard to remember Krishna." And Prabhupada said, "No. How can you not remember Krishna seeing all this? That's the point of this. To establish the sambandha that everything is connected to Krishna. And if we can see in that way, then there's never forgetting Krishna." And that's a basis. That's not an end in itself. That's a basis upon which we can then develop further our remembrance of Krishna as Bhagwan, engaging in pastimes with his pure devotees. Okay, so that's the goal. And this is simply a stepping stone to get us to that. Okay, I'd like to stop there. If anyone has any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhuji, do we have a microphone here? At the back.
Hare Krishna. When we hear these descriptions, we have to have faith in them, and naturally as devotees we do have faith in them. But I personally don't know if somebody would ask me, never happened, but for now I don't know what to say when somebody asks. Earth is a round thing, you know, and there are other planets floating in the air, and here it is described as something flat and a different form. So, you know, why such a different perception for our condition and for our conditioned vision? How can we reconcile for somebody who would ask us about it? What, how we can explain it?
That's a good question. In a few years, you'll be able to invite them to Mayapur and come into the temple of the Vedic Planetarium, and then they can directly see. Until then, it's up to you. So the Earth is described herein as a very large, expansive, like a disc, with various features of oceans and islands. So. But then again, the Earth is also a globe. So both are there. Prabhupada accepted this. In a discussion, Prabhupada was asked, "So, is the earth flat or is it round?" And Bhakti Premara said, "It is both." And Prabhupada said, "Yes. It's both." And according to our level of sensual experience, we'll perceive it as one or the other. And that's according to what our work is in this world. Lord Brahma, he has the duties to generate, to, you know, put together as a secondary creation the whole universe. So he has to see everything as it is. He has to. It's part of his job. We don't. It's not our duty to do that. We're confined. So here we're hearing about Jambudvipa, and on the southern side of Jambudvipa is Bharatvarsha. We are bound to this land by our previous activities, the reactions to our previous activities. And as far as the earth goes, we don't see anything beyond there. And you can explain, if you want, that the mechanism of our bondage is so perfect that we don't even see that we're bound. Like we were mentioning before about the animal is bound to a central post, he walks around, and he doesn't even know he's bound, but he thinks he's going forever. So when this tract of land is in the shape of a sphere or a globe, you can go as far as you like in any direction, and you'll always be stuck within it. This shows that there's someone higher, there's a higher power who's keeping us stuck here. If we become more, you know, qualified, the kings of the earth in the days of Maharaj Parikshit, Maharaj Yudhishthira, when they're emperors of the whole of Jambudvipa, they could travel from one varsha to the other. They can do it. The Pandavas went. Arjuna went here, there, this varsha, that varsha. Got all the way to Uttarakuru varsha on the northern side. And there someone came to the gate and said, "Oh, don't come in here, some really big, don't come in here." But they still offered their tribute. Maharaj Parikshit also traveled all over the different varshas of Jambudvipa. So they can do, because it's part of their duty to make sure that everything's being done nicely. Now, that's not our duty, so we don't have access. So that's one way you can answer. Is that okay? Yes, Guruji.
During the partial destruction of the universe, this all these planetary systems, like Pool, Puvak and Swag, they are destroyed, is it?
They're inundated. Like the earth doesn't dissolve, but it becomes covered by water. And most of the features are removed, but the principal mountains ranges, they remain.
So this Devatas and Panevatas, they are destroyed also because, like, sages from Mahaloka, they level higher, but this lower Devatas.
Bhuloka, Bhuvalok, and Svarlok.
Everybody's
inundated, covered with water.
So even the Mount Meru?
Absolutely, above Mount Meru, yes. It should be all the way up to the pole star, because Svargaloka, the heavenly planets, begins from where the sun planet is and goes up to where the pole star is. So everything within there. Pole star, Dhruvaloka. Everything within there is Svargaloka. Okay. Anything else? Okay, so we're finished a little early. We were asked to finish by 7:55, but it's only 7:50. Oh, according to that clock. Okay, we have a few minutes to go. Seeing as we've just finished the chapter, we can go through a couple of verses and just bring out a few important features, perhaps. In text 5...
Ask one more question.
Oh, you want to ask another question? Okay.
During when they go and approach Brahma, you said he's residing
on top of Mount Meru. Yes.
He is like working time there. He has specific time where they are able to approach him, or he's expanding and he's manifested on two places at the same time.
Yes. Both at the same time.
Both at the same time.
Yes. In text 5, we heard that the planetary system as Bhumandala resembles a lotus flower. So this description is consistent in all the Puranas. And it's seven islands, which means the seven ring islands that were generated by Maharaj Priyavrata when he was going around. other world of the, so the world is the, you know, the corolla of the petals, how they all arrange nicely, circularly. Jambudvip in the center is the central part of the world. Okay? But then a second description is given in this verse. There's two descriptions of Jambudvip given in the same verse. First, it's like the middle of the world. So that's all the petals that come out like this. And the second part is it's round like the leaf of a lotus flower. So it's like the world and it's like the leaf. Okay? So the leaf is more of a flap, like the description we're given here of a flat Jambudvip with mountain ranges coming and round. Whereas the world brings it into more of a spherical form. Srila Prabhupada said like that when he was asked, how is it we can go from Los Angeles, from America to India? We can go eastwards or we can go westwards, either way, it doesn't matter if it's flat. Prabhupada said, no, it's like a lotus petal. Like that. So in Jambudvip there's eight varshas that have this form and together they make the whirl of the lotus. So in one of the Puranas it gives a slightly different layout in that these eight petals, Bharat varshas on the north, on the south side, Guru Varsha on the north, and it states one of each of them in the eight directions. And together they form what's described to be like a single globe. But actually, it's eight petals all combined together to form a world. And each one has its individual existence, but all together they also form a world of a lotus. So we don't experience, and it mentions that, you know, on the equator, on the north side, there'll be this city, on the east side, this city, west side, this city. We don't see those. They're beyond our experience. Yes?
All the stars what we see on the sky, this is from what planetary system?
All the luminaries that we see in the sky are in Swargaloka. We see a small part of Earth. We see the stars and the planets, which are all Swargaloka. And beyond that, we don't see anything. We don't see the subterranean seven planets. We don't see Bhuvaloka. We don't see the higher Mahajana Tapasatya. We just see part of Earth and the luminaries of Swargaloka. So each of the stars that we see, you go to Swargaloka, there's a person in a chariot there. There's a person in a Vimana flying around effulgent. Each of the planets that we see, there's a planetary deity in his chariot with his, you know, a couple of associates pulled by horses flying around.
Swargaloka is a planetary system, but there is many planets, correct? Like what we see here at least.
There's many planets, yes. Yeah. And the sun illuminates all of them. It is by the power of the sun that all of these luminaries shine. Prabhupada stated this in one earlier purport.
And then this Bhumandala, this earthly planetary system, there is also many planets, like Earth, with similar living beings.
One Earth, but many parts of Earth, each of which the inhabitants there experience just their part.
So we are one of that part.
Yes. This Gola, Bhugola. And there's a relationship. You know, later on we'll get into the movement of the sun around Mount Meru. It's drawn this way with the wheel of time and every day, and it goes the other direction with its chariot. And there's a relationship between how far the sun is out from Meru to our experience of how far north of south the equator goes. And even, you know, mathematically, if it's this far out, then it's going to be this far south. If it's this far out, it's going to be this far north. So there's direct relation and correspondence between the two. Bhumandala is like the whole, and all of these things are like the parts. And the parts are one with, but also different from the whole. Now we have to stop. Kuntraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. And go to Premanand Ki Jai.